2 months ago, and he was talking about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, which was revelational for me to hear somebody actually talk about the big book. I thought he had to have a lot of long-term sobriety. He talked a lot about the steps and about what it was like to be sober. So it's not my speaker meeting. It is your chance to listen to Stan C. come on up and share. So,
my name's Stan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Stan.
And I want to welcome the new people to Alcoholics Anonymous, let you know that you're welcome here in this fellowship. And we want you to stick around long enough to hear the message of hope, and that we can recover from the similar state of mind and body. And thank you, Derek, for asking me to come out here and lead. And as I was sitting there before the meeting started, I got a text message from my daughter. And she reminded me, don't forget to say the speaker's prayer. And that speaker's prayer is, God, let me be a hit. I don't know if anybody can relate to that. Anyways. But I don't know. I'm truly honored to be here today. And I'm a lot nervous. I had too much coffee. But I also forgot my glasses. So if I try and quote out of the book and I say the wrong words, I apologize. But, oh, sure, yeah. Okay. Before I start, I want to read something out of the big book that always stood out to me. And it says, do I look funny with these glasses? Anyways.
Pretty good. Going on. Pretty
I might just wear them because I can't see anybody. It's better than I could. Anyways, on the forward to the first edition, it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemed open state of mind and body. And that's why every time I share, I always open up by welcoming the new people and letting them know that there is hope in these rooms. And the first time I read that, I was like, how's that going to pertain to a guy like me? And this was written so far back. And it was the first 100 members of Alcoholics Anonymous that were men and women. And it was when it said that they have recovered from a seeming hopeless state of mind and body, I didn't understand what that meant. It wasn't until I came in here I started doing the work and things were happening in my life. Before the meeting, I was sharing with somebody, and they were telling me how they felt different and how they felt good. And I was explaining to them that that's a sufficient substitute that we come in Alcoholics Anonymous and we find. That the same things that we were seeking in the drink, or even in drug in my case, you know, I found right here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's that happy, joyous, and free that I'm okay with who I am and what's going on in my life, you know. I was born, if nobody knows this, I was born and raised in Santa Maria, California, which is right here. It's a little town, you know, and it was little when I was growing up, you know. Of course, I had two parents, you know, there was a mother and a father, you know. And, you know, I loved them a lot, you know. And as I was growing up, I was spoiled, man. I got, you know, we weren't rich, but I got whatever I wanted, especially having my own way, you know. As far as I can remember. And when I was little, I remember my parents drinking all the time. They'd have these trios come over, and they'd be singing with the guitars, and they'd be hooping and hollering, and I'd be like, man, that looks like fun, you know? And I never understood what was really going on, you know? And I remember as I was little, my dad would give me a drink or whatever he was drinking, and if it tasted nasty, I'd be like, you son of a, why are you giving me this crap, you know? And they like looking at me as I'm, you know, running around buzzed and running to the walls, you know? So I didn't understand. I knew it was something different, you know? I didn't have, you know, a big clue on what it was, you know? But, you know what? I really love my family, you know? I really love my mom, my dad, and it came time where they split up, and that was, you know, something that really damaged me. But that's not what makes me an alcoholic, I'll tell you that much right now, you know? And because of that divorce, it didn't make me an alcoholic, you know? But, you know, when I got to spend a lot of time with both my mom and my dad, you know? And I'm going to go real quick. I'm not going to tell you from when I was a toddler till, you know, whatever. Anyways, so what happened was, you know, my mom lived on one side of town and my dad lived on the other side of town. And so I went to school in a nice neighborhood, which was Miller School right here, and my playground was the projects, you know? And that's where I grew up. You know, and as far as I can remember, I had my sister who lived there, and my nieces and my nephew who lived there, and those were like my brothers and sisters right there too, because I spent a lot of time with them growing up. And so as I was growing up, I was so dang confused because I wanted to be this little cholo, this little gangster. But then I go to school on the nice side of town, and I'd be like, yeah, Northwest. And they'd be like, what are you talking about? And why you dress like that? You know? So I was my own little entity at that school, you know. And then and there was other people at that school, and they were Mexican. They spoke Spanish, and I didn't speak Spanish, so I had to fight my way through school, you know. And it was because I was different, you know. And I'm going to share this little story that always makes me feel comfortable. When I was 11 years old, you know, I had this bright idea. And if nobody knows, I got a big head because I like to think, you know. I've been a thinker all my life, and I'm going to try and figure things out on my own. You know, I don't need nobody's help. And so at 11 years old, I had this bright idea, man. This bright idea got me in a lot of trouble. I stole my mom's car. And I went to the projects and went to go pick up all my little homies. And we drove around town drinking and smoking cigarettes. And we were cool, man. And here I am behind the steering wheel, you know, like this, driving around. And sure enough, we got pulled over, man. And I remember this like if it was yesterday. The cop comes up and he's all, yeah, license and registration. And he's seen it. He was like, what the hell? And he's like, oh, my God. And he's telling his partner, come here. You got to see this. You know, and the partner's like, oh. And so we all got in trouble. And I got home, and my mom had no idea that I was the one who took the car. And my friends, their parents had to come pick them up, and their parents were beating their ass and all that stuff. And I remember the next day when I see my dad, man, that was the last great whooping I ever got, man. He beat my ass. And then afterwards, he chuckled, and he goes, man, so how far did you go? I was like, what's wrong with you? So when I was 12 years old, he decided to rent a car and let me drive all the way from here to Las Vegas because I had been there enough times as a kid. Like I said, I was spoiled. And my dad took me everywhere he went. We used to go to the horse race track, you know, Santa Anita, Hollywood Park, Del Mar, and Las Vegas. Those are the places I saw. Gambling was another part of what I witnessed, you know. I had no idea what was going on, you know, and especially when you had money. But you know, but to go back to when I was 11, that was the first time I ever drank. It was the first time I ever smoked weed on my own, you know, because there have been plenty of times when my dad was like, here, he used to hand me a beer, carry me on his shoulders, he'd hand me a beer, I'd be carrying this old Coors little plastic six-pack container, and he'd be like, here, open the beer, and I'd open the beer, I'd take a drink, and I'd give it to him, you know, but here I am at 11 years old, and I made a conscious decision that I'm going to take a drink, and what happened was when I took that first drink is what makes me an alcoholic, is I took a drink, and I couldn't stop, man. The phenomenon of craving kicked in, and I just kept drinking. I remember I drank till I blacked out, and I woke up, and I had a friend that was with me, and he was like, man, you shouldn't have passed out. We were smoking weed and all this other good stuff, and I was like, man. So for a long time, I was trying to chase that because I was jealous of my friend because of what he did with my brother. And, so that was the beginning of my drinking. You know, I was 11 years old and smoking marijuana. Recreational marijuana. I know this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and I give Alcoholics Anonymous respect, but drugs is part of my story, and I'm not going to get into it too deep. You know, that's just me. If you want to hear about it, we can talk after the meeting. But anyway, so that was the beginning of my drinking career. I went into junior high so mixed up. You know, I didn't know what I wanted to be, so I'm still hanging out in these projects. And I'm riding a skateboard. So next thing you know, I'm a gang member riding a skateboard. And I don't know if anybody else can relate to that, but that's just my story, man. And the more I was into that culture, the more I kept drinking, the more I kept using, you know. And at 13 years old, I made a very, very conscious decision that I was going to try some recreational cocaine. And that was my story, man. I tried it and I loved it. So drinking, marijuana, and cocaine for my story from then on. And I'd get in trouble. I'd get kicked out of school. I'd get suspended. Then they sent me to this continuation school, and I was doing continuation school. And I had it pretty made when I was going to this continuation school. I'd get up in the morning. I'd ride my skateboard to my friend's house. We take a couple of bong rips, and then we go to school. And after school, we go drink some Strawberry Hill. I don't know if anyone knows what Strawberry Hill is. But we used to drink that Strawberry Hill or King Cobra. I don't know if anybody knows what King Cobra is, but man, those were my drinks back then, you know. And my first experience with King Cobra was I was 13 years old, and me and this friend, we had this girl, a common friend, and we're both kind of like trying to hit on her. So she invited us over to her house, and I'm like, yeah, let's do this. So we went to her house, and we're drinking, and they were like, yeah, what do you guys want to drink? We're like, King Cobra, yeah. And they're like, okay, well, what do you want until then? And we're like, tequila, yeah. So what happened, to make a long story short, man, I made a fool of myself. I got drunk and started throwing up in her bathroom, and I pass out, and I wake up, and my friend's all hugged up with her, and I was like, so there goes my first experience with being hurt, and my pride had been, oh my God, and my ego, you know? So for a long time, I'm trying to drink and control it, man. Drink and control it. So I kept drinking and drinking until I was able to control it, which was never, but that's my story. So all my teen years were just kind of like just drinking away, using drugs, and putting everybody else on the back burner. And I never understood what selfish and self-centered meant until I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, and how selfish I was, you know, and then putting my parents through a lot of stuff too, you know. So right when I turned 18, I dropped out of high school. I had a great idea. Like I said, man, I get great ideas. And I got a great idea that I'm going to drop out of high school and move out to the Bay Area with an older friend of mine and go try some recreational drugs out there and alcohol. And I remember I was out there for like 2 or 3 weeks, and I ended up calling my mom, telling her, Mom, you got to come get me. You got to come get me. You know, and I kind of passed up the other point that, you know, I used to love skateboarding a lot, and I was pretty good at it, but drinking and drugging was a little bit more important, a little bit more important than that stuff, and I eventually gave it up. I traded my skateboard for some recreational drugs, and that was it, man. So after I called my mom and come back, I had another great idea. You know what? I got to find a girlfriend. All I need is a girlfriend. I'm so damn codependent. I need a girlfriend. But mind you, from when I was like 15 till I was 19, I didn't have a girlfriend. Drugs and alcohol filled that void for a guy like me. They were way more important. Way more important than anything else, you know? It's kind of like my God. I can understand higher power because that's what it was to me. I had to drink. I had to use drugs. And that filled that void, you know? And so I had that bright idea, and I found somebody. And oh my God, we were the worst pair. My God, we used to kill each other. And she ended up pregnant. She ended up pregnant, and she no longer wanted me in her life no more, and I was devastated, and I became suicidal because she left pregnant, and all I wanted was a baby, all I wanted was a family, and that's my oldest daughter she left with, and that called for way more drinking and way more drug abuse, and I was dying, man. I got to the point where I couldn't stop no matter what. There was no way I can get off this stuff, and I found a miracle. I found a miracle. Recreational methamphetamine. Oh my God, that just took care of everything for me. And it took me away from that cocaine. It took me away from a bad habit. But I had no idea. I just switched over to something else. You know? And drinking and drugging was once again more longer. I could do it for days, you know? let me rephrase that. I can do it for months, you know? Forget days. And my life had just been just going down, man, going downhill. And one day some guy asked me if I wanted to help him get rid of this stuff. And right away I became Tony Montana, like in Scarface. And I thought I was the man. I thought I was somebody. Oh my God, how wrong I was. I ended up in jail. And prior to, I got in trouble, and then they told me, okay, you might have a problem, sir. And I was like, yeah, I do. Why? What's up? No jail? Cool. That's me, you know? And in court, we diagnosed more alcoholics and drug addicts than anywhere else. Because they're like, look, you can do 6 months, but if you're an alcoholic or a drug addict, we got a program. Hey, I'm an alcoholic, drug addict. Yeah, okay. You know, so they sent me this program called Central Coast Headways. And so I started going to this place, and then they were telling me that it's going to cost a lot of money, so I stopped going to that place. They told me I had to do some AA meetings, and I was like, okay. And there used to be this place way on the other end of Broadway. It's called Casa Seca. And I went to my first meeting ever. This is my experience of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to this meeting. The whole room is smoked out. I thought it was at the billiards. But I noticed those were tables and chairs. And I was like, okay. And I heard these two gentlemen sharing, man. And I was like, wow, maybe I do have a problem. These guys know what they're talking about. So after the meeting, I went out front and I went to go smoke a cigarette with them. And they're talking amongst themselves. Like, hey, so what do you guys do after this? No, this and that. And they're like, oh, well, nothing white. And I was like, no, man, come on. They're like, we're going to go drink and get loaded right now. And I was like, what? You guys were just saying, come on, let's go. And I took off with them. So that was my first experience with going to meetings. I thought everyone was full of shit, man. And, you know, I can honestly say that the whole time, man, I was hurting inside but didn't know it. I was hurting inside and didn't know it. I was spiritually bankrupt and didn't know it. And what happened again was I got caught up. And this time they wanted to send me to prison. They wanted to send me to jail. And I remember I got out on bail, and I'm out on bail running around trying to figure out where my way out of this. You know, I got me a lawyer. Turned out this lawyer was just as freaking addicted as I was, you know? Just as alcoholic as I was, you know? And I was like, oh, wow. You know, where did they get these guys from? So I remember sitting out in front of my house, and these two guys walked up, and they were talking to my nephew. And I was like, what? They had these flyers, and I was like, yeah, it might be a party. And as I was walking up, my nephew had his head down, and he's like this. And I was like, why is his head down? And it turned out that these two guys were from some denomination, and they were telling them about this church stuff. And right there and then, I got an inkling of what a God might be like. And I was hoping that maybe I might be able to tap into this something else, you know, because I was hurting on the inside. I had to get out of myself right here, right now, you know. So that's why I kept drinking. That's why I kept using drugs, because I had to get outside of myself. And I didn't know that. I didn't know what that meant, you know. Not until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I started reading this big book. And what happened was I ended up going to jail. They gave me a year in county. And I remember in jail, I got this concept of a God. And it's the same concept I have today, you know. But for so long, I just kept putting him off, you know. And I didn't know in the big book. In the big book, it talks about that. It says that, you know, by the way, God gave us brains to use. So if God gave me a brain to use, and every time I'm drinking, I'm using, I'm giving God the finger. And I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that. And that works for a guy like me. It might not work for you, but it works for me. Anytime I'm selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, I'm completely cutting myself off from the sunlight of the Spirit, and I'm no longer getting a tan on the inside. And I heard someone share that, and that stuck with me because I feel that. Whenever it's all about me, I'm feeling restless, irritable, and discontent. In the doctor's opinion, that's when I take a drink. That's when a guy like me takes a drink. So I brought that God out with me. I ended up getting back with that with my oldest daughter, her mom. And we decided I had another bright idea that we're going to get married, and this is going to fix everything. You know, it's going to take away the pain of the past. And oh my God, that went so wrong. And I mean so wrong that that same evening that we got married, we're at Hometown Buffet arguing about some stupid shit. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, I picked the winners. You know, I don't know if anybody knows that. And I stayed pretty dry for a long time. I tried doing this little church thing. I'm going to church. I'm getting baptized. I'm getting married. You know, I was thinking hiding in the church was going to help me, and I was going to become a better man.
Back door.
Other door. Anyways, so that just threw me off.
You're doing such a good job.
Thank you. Okay, so what happened was I even lost my thought. Thanks, Steve. Yeah. So I'm at church. And I'm still trying to keep things together. So we had a bright idea, and we're going to move out to Oklahoma, get away from San Maria, get away from all the drama. And nobody told me that there was still alcohol and there was still drugs in Oklahoma. If I would have known that, I would have just dug a hole, you know? Yeah. But had two more kids with this woman, and things just didn't work out right. And I did everything I could as being a father, being a man, and being a provider for my family, and I was not respected. And I had to remove myself from that whole situation. So that was probably one of the hardest things I ever did, was leave her. And it hurt. It hurt me. So what happens? What do we do when we're hurt? You know, we know how to take away the good hurt, you know, the big hurt. So I drank and I used myself, used more drugs, and just hurt more, man. It seemed like no matter how much I ran, I wasn't really getting far at all, you know. I'm like a dog chasing his tail. I'm just going in circles, you know, moving right along, you know, to nowhere. And I came back to California, and as I was on my way back from California, one of my best friends got shot and killed by San Marino PD, and I was looking forward to seeing him when I was coming back to town. And the doctor's opinion says, brought the emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message must have depth and weight. We buried quite a few friends, you know, and the things that they had did, you would have think that, you know, that would have stopped me, you know. I had another friend who was running from parole, and they just came up in there and they shot him and they killed him. And I kept telling myself when I went to prison that that's the last thing I'm going to do. I'm not going to run from parole. I'm not going to run from the police because, you know, they're pretty trigger happy right now. And when I ended up going to prison, man, those are the things I did, and I enjoyed it, man. I loved running. I loved a good run from the police or from parole. So I moved back to San Maria, and all this other stuff is going on. Like I said, man, I got a big head. I like to think, man. I like to figure things out. And I always come up with the best ideas in the whole world. So I figured, I need another woman, you know. I'm just such a male pig, I'm sorry. So sure enough, I found somebody else. Someone just like me, you know. Maybe a little bit less than me, you know, because I need to drink more, you know, and use more recreational drugs than that person. So she ended up getting pregnant. Oh my God, another kid. So I kept going back and forth to jail, back and forth to jail. My life was so unmanageable. I could not manage nothing. I couldn't manage a job. I've had plenty of jobs, and the longest I'd stay was maybe 3 months or less. And you would have think that might have helped, you know. In 2001, they started this program called Prop 36, and I was released to it. And I remember being in jail, and I remember telling her, we're going to go to church and all this other good stuff, you know. We're going to do the spiritual thing, you know. We're going to be the religious thing and all this. And she was already introduced to these rooms. And she was telling me, no, just come with me and meet. I'm like, no. And she was like, look, if you come with me to one meeting, then I won't ever ask you again if you don't like it. And I was like, them people are fake. I'm telling you, right? She's all, just come. And I'm like, all right, then. So I came to a meeting, and for some reason I stayed. I heard what I needed to hear. And I just kept coming back to meetings. And then she was living in this house, this women's house. And so I would meet her at meetings, and next thing you know, I'm at the club all the time. Next thing you know, I'm working at the club, I'm volunteering at the club all the time. And all my time had been spent right there at the long club. And I got a sponsor, I started working some steps, and things were changing. But you know what didn't change was the selfishness and self-centeredness. That wasn't quite going away. I would do things, I would help people out with ulterior motives all the time. And I remember after a year, these old timers had told me, don't you have kids? And I was like, yeah, because normally we help each other out. So I was thinking they were going to break me off something. So I was telling them, yeah, He goes, once you get a fucking job, man. I was like, oh, shit, what? A job? That was a foreign concept, let me tell you. And I said, all right. And I went out and I found a job, you know. But while I was there at that lawn club, man, I was being very selfish and self-centered. I was getting myself in a lot of wrecks, you know. A lot of wrecks, and it had to deal with newcomers. And I'm not ashamed to admit that today. You know, that's just who I am. That's part of my makeup. And if it wasn't for those experiences, I wouldn't be here today, or I wouldn't be able to share them. But it made me and shaped me into the man who I am today. You know, so I got a job, and I become a workaholic, and going to work and taking care of my family is a little bit more important than my spirituality and my recovery. And eventually I ended up getting loaded again. And I knew when I did that was going to be hard for me to come back. It was going to be hard. And I tried going to detox, and I went to detox and did it all wrong in detox, you know. And got out and just continued to do what I was doing. And I came to terms with, you know what, I'm going to go to prison. And I'm okay with it. I'm okay with what's going to happen. And that's, those are the things that we're, you know, when it's no longer acceptable that, hey, I'm going to end up going to jail. Hey, I'm going to get 90 days. Oh, well, you know, my probation officer is going to lock me up. Or, oh, well, my family's going to leave me. Or my family's going to kick me out. You know, oh, well. When those things are no longer acceptable in my life, was I able to change? And right there at that moment, I'm okay with it. And I ended up going to prison my first term. In my first term in prison, man, I was scared. I was really scared, man. I didn't want to go to prison, but I already knew I was on my way. And when I got to prison, man, I had, you ever hear somebody that, you know, if you don't mind, so it's, be humble or get humbled, and that was my story, man. I got humbled real quick, you know. Being told what to do and having to do it, you know, and put my life at risk. I remember when I showed up at the, when I finally got to my prison where I was going to, which was a Tehachapi level 2, there was this chapel, a Protestant chapel, and I used to sneak off to that chapel all the time when no one was looking, and I got involved in this program there, and I got ordained through that church. And I remember that I had this bright idea that I'm going to get out and I'm going to start my own church, you know, mm-hmm. Dance around like David, like a fool. And I got out, and 6 hours after I paroled, man, I was drunk and loaded, and all those credentials that I walked out of that prison with were gone. Were gone. And I don't remember feeling so demoralized at that moment. Like, how did I get here, you know? And I went and checked in with parole, and they gave me a pass. I'm like, how are you going to give me a pass, man? And things were just going downhill from there. A relationship with that woman I had, and then we had 2 kids on my first term. She had another son. That's my baby boy. And our relationship went real south real quick. And things were just getting worse and worse. And like they say, you know, wherever you, you know, from your last drink, is when you go back out, you go right back to where you left off. And that was my story, man. And it just kept getting darker and darker. And I just remember wanting to stop, but couldn't. And I understand that. I understand wanting to stop and just can't, man. And there's nothing big and bright that's going to happen in my life that's going to make me stop, you know? I'd say simple stuff, like if I get a job, you know, hey, that's it, I'm going to stop right there, you know, and I just couldn't stop, man, and I kept going back to prison, and as scared as I was going to prison, I just kept going. I became comfortable, and I became okay with it, when that stuff is not acceptable, you know. And I remember on my first violation, I went back, and man, me and my baby's mom were trying to do this, we're trying to do something different. And I went back, and I remember getting out of prison and calling to see how come she didn't come to be at the gate when I got out. And another man answered my phone, and oh my God, that was probably the worst, man. Answering my phone. I pay that damn bill. No. But, you know, to have that happen, and I remember hanging up the phone, and I turned around, there's AM, PM, and I ran inside that store, and I bought me an 18-pack. And then the next thought in my head was, you know what, I might as well go up to that gate and tell them, hey, you guys let out the wrong person. I don't need to be out here right now, because I knew I was going to do something very bad to myself, and maybe even others, you know. But I remember getting drunk all the way home from Wasco, and when I got home, man, I went and picked up some recreational drugs, and I got loaded, and I went to my parole officer the first day I can go, and I went in there, and I told him, go ahead, take me. And he's like, what happened? And I explained to him what happened, and this guy had, like, empathy for me. You know, he felt sorry for me, and I was like, man, you're not supposed to feel sorry for me. But he did. He's like, man, he's like, well, you got somewhere to go. He's like, I'm not even going to worry about that right now. He's like, I'm just worried about, I'm like, if you're worried about me, you would take me back in right now, because I am not in the right state of mind. I'm not in the right condition for me to be out here on the streets, because it's only going to get worse. And it did. And it did. And not too much longer after I checked in with him, I had picked up another term. So, you know, it's just my drinking and my using had just taken me to places I didn't want to go. And not only my drinking and using, but you add my thinking to my drinking and using, oh my God, I'm in a bad spot, you know. And I'm so surprised I didn't come in here just completely loony, whacked out, you know. Because, I don't know, I like to say my drinking and using took me places, but it was more like my thinking took me places. You know, I always went on trips to Santa Barbara, to Wasco, to Tehachapi, you know. I traveled. I don't know if anybody can relate to that, but I traveled places, you know. And as much as I wanted this God in my life, oh my God, I remember thinking about God quite often and wanting God in my life, you know, and wanting something different in my life. You know, and it, I've been that way since I was a kid. I never got tattoos because I always see something brighter for myself. You know, that was like my main reason why I never got tattoos, because I wanted to be somebody. I don't know if it was a doctor, lawyer, you know, something like that, you know, fire truck driver, or I don't know. Just I wanted to be something different. I wanted to be somebody in life, you know. And I know when I, at career day in high school, I didn't go up to the AA booth and be like, hey, check this out, in about 30, 40 years from now, you know, I want to be a firm member of Alcoholics Anonymous, be able to carry the message to all the people and save people, you know. I remember having dreams of being like this big-time pastor or something like that, you know, and being able to help and heal people, you know. But I don't know, I couldn't get right with Stan at all. So far from Stan, but yet I was so close that I just wanted to stop, man. You know, I showed up. I ended up getting in trouble October 9th, 2008, and that was my clean date for a while. And I went to the Santa Barbara Rescue Mission, and my life changed. And I got a good dose of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a real good sponsor, and we worked through these steps, and I worked through that book, And I remember my sponsor used to tell me, because I used to tell him stuff. I remember on Mother's Day, and I was like, you know, I was going to go, you know, with my mom on Mother's Day and the snap, but you know what the book says? And he goes, no, I don't. What does the book say? I go, you know, not to be around. He goes, show me where it says that in the big book and call me back. Hung up on me. And I remember I looked in the big book, and I didn't find it. And that's what kept me going to that big book, you know. And it tells me if I have a legitimate reason to be in a place like that. And so I went and I spent my Mother's Day with my mom. But while I was in Santa Barbara, man, I attended a lot of meetings, a lot of men's stag meetings. And I got to know a lot of good men and a lot of people with time out there. And so I stayed close with the program. And I had these kids that were in foster care, and I had no idea. I remember I got out and I called the lady. They already told me that they were going to adopt them out. And this is the miracle. Because I called that lady and I told her, hey, I go, you know what? If I can just visit them, so that way at least they see that I didn't give up on them, you know, can you do that for me? And she goes, yeah, I'll try and do that for you. 2 months later, she called me up. She said, do you want custody of these kids? And I was like, wow. I couldn't believe that. I went from a court day where they're telling me that no way you're going to see them. No way you're going to get them. to them calling me up and asking me if I wanted custody of them. And that was because I was applying these things right here, these principles in all my affairs, and I applied them with them, you know. So I got custody of them. I had to come back to Santa Maria. Santa Barbara was a little bit too expensive for a guy like me. I don't think they take food stamps for rent out there. But anyway, so, you know, I came back to Santa Maria, and, I did a lot of good stuff around here, and I stayed sober. I helped out a lot of guys. You know, I had a lot of commitments, and I lost my father August 20th of 2010, and that was my best friend. We found him. He had a massive heart attack, and he passed away. And thank God it was instantly. Thank God he didn't suffer for a little while. And then I lost my daughter November 24th, 2010, back to back. And I was going to school full time at that time. And I stayed sober through it. And I stayed close to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, a lot of the people that are in these rooms right now were there for me when it happened. Then I get bright ideas, man. And I kept going to school, and then I had a lot of unresolved grief, and I thought maybe trying to get in a relationship was going to help it, and it didn't. Because the moment things weren't going my way, man, I freaking flipped my wig, and I have all this anger that I didn't even know I had. And I drank again. I made the decision to give your program back. There was two things that my sponsor told me to do. Actually, three. He told me to go back and do the reading, do the seven-step prayer, and then go grab a newcomer or go grab one of my sponsees. And that was the one thing I couldn't get outside of myself to go and do. And I kept telling myself, I'm going to get loaded. I'm going to get loaded. I'm going to get loaded. I put it on Facebook. And the next morning, I prayed and I told God, I go, check this out. If you don't show up at 2 o'clock, I'm going to call this number. I'm going to go to the store and I'm going to drink and I'm going to get loaded. And my phone had been blowing up all morning. All morning. And that was God. You know? That's why I hear that story. Someone shares about how the guy fell off the boat. They sent him a rescue ship. They sent him a lifesaver. And he didn't take it. So he dies and goes to heaven. He's like, God, how come you didn't show up? He's all full. I gave you all this stuff. Why didn't you take it? That was my story, man. All them people were calling and reaching out to me. That was God. And I didn't take it. And so I picked up that drink. And it was a conscious decision. It wasn't like I was all squirrely or, you know, someone just slipped it to me. You know, it was a conscious decision that I'm going to take this drink. And that's it. And there goes my recovery. And I tried to come back, but I couldn't. And so for a long time while I was out there, man, I was hurting. All on the inside. All on the inside. Because I was comfortable living in my car. My car got towed away. I was sleeping on the curb. Sleeping in a bush. I didn't have nowhere to go. But I was okay as long as I had my bottle with me. And oh my God, I drank so much. And I start on cheap vodka and I work my way down. However far down I go is however far down I go. You know, I'm not kind of, sort of, maybe just a little bit alcoholic. No, I'm alcoholic. I am alcoholic. And that's probably the realest shit I ever said. Is that I'm alcoholic. I finally made it back to the rooms May 30th of 2013, and by the grace of God, I'm still here. And it was, I had no idea, had no intention on coming back in here. But yet, every night I drank and I would come to, I would want to be in here. I'd want to be in here. And when I finally got here, I surrendered to the program. They say when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And that has been my story here in Alcoholics Anonymous this time around. You know, I showed up and there was a gentleman here who got sober in the group that I got sober in Santa Barbara. So I asked him to be my sponsor. And today, man, my life is just, it has changed so much from where I come from day one, from May 30th till right here and right now. You know, and I come to Alcoholics Anonymous for recovery right here, right now. You know, I don't rely on yesterday's recovery or today at all. You know, and the first 164 pages of this big book right here, this is what's changing my life today. Everything that's written in here. And there's quite a few different things. And let me read one thing before I shut up. But It says one thing that's been my promise since I've been here. And it says, there is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. That's in Bill's story. That was written in 1939. And the reason why I share that is because if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't be here right now. I had just recently lost my sister. And 2 weeks ago, yesterday, we lost our mother. And if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, man, I wouldn't be here at all. I'd be drunk and loaded. If it wasn't for me coming in here and really doing this third step and just trusting God, I would not be here right now. I have better plans. Let me tell you, people, I got a big head and I like to think and I like to figure it out on my own. But if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous and you people, I wouldn't have this life that I have today. That's all I got. Thanks.
Let's give another round of applause to our speaker. Okay, so now we're going to do the big book.